There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Going?
Yeah, I'm gonna treat you like a firework. Yeah, you're gonna... since you're on fire. Yeah.
Well, you don't. All right, that's Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel. With us as always, we got this guy over here.
Yeah, I'm Danny the Pyro. Yeah, I set your bush on fire. Hey, girl.
Danny the Pyro.
I've never had a date. You know,
no, you have. Kind of why not, Danny? What's been holding you back?
I don't know. I just thought that women would appreciate my passion. You know, I'm the inner. I'm going to say flame inside of me, but then when you open up about how you just love to see the buildings go up in flames and how I just, you know, first opportunity I'll set a bush on fire, it's just hard to find that willing participant.
It is. You know, women
it's
do like a man.
It's hard to find my yin to my yang.
Right, right. Women do like a man with passion, but like a passion for the arts or a passion for, you know, fine cuisine.
What are you talking about, like setting fire to pictures?
Right, yeah, or steaks.
You can't just set fire to a woman's bush hair and expect to get a date in this fucking... What am I supposed to do? It's my one skill.
And everyone has to have something, you know? And it's a great skill.
I feel bad for the pyros out there that
I
can't find love.
Yeah, well, I do too. Ladies love a pyro. If you see a pyro, go give him a kiss today. It's National Pyro Appreciation Day.
Every burning church is a poem to you. Every burning mailbox full of his shit is a poem to you. It's like a mix CD.
Right, right. Very
date
nice.
Date a pyro. Save a church.
I've
that's
heard
what
that.
I like to say.
Huh. Yeah.
You know, I actually fuck the churches. No, yeah, I'm sorry
asking,
I even said
why?
That. Yeah. My blood just ran cold when I said that.
Uh-oh.
No, date a pyro. Save an orphanage.
Yeah. Save orphanage. An orphanage. Better. Well, speaking of burning churches, fires, and flames, God knows burning churches... And fires and flames
what?
Occur mostly during wartime.
Sure, good segue.
Yeah, good.
Oh, I'm the king of the segue. The king of the segue.
Oh, yeah, because you don't walk anywhere. You just use
that's
your
right.
fucking segue.
I'll lean forward when I want to go forward. Today we're going to discuss a very unique kind of serial killer. A serial killer that they are under the radar because on the radar is a bunch of warships that are bombing, warplanes just bombing the shit out of your town.
What?
So what I'm telling you is...
Again, this. I mean, you did one...
Serial killers. I'm doing good here. Serial killers during wartime. That's what we're discussing today. Under the radar, murder, murder, murder.
And a lot of this is opportunity killers, too. These are people that, you know, you take... There are thousands upon millions of casualties already happening, and you could just toss some in the fire there. Like one of the... theories behind the Zodiac Killer was that he was a hitman who was killing other people dressed in a costume in order to cover the one hit that he was paid to do, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, it is extremely fun.
And specifically, we're doing World War II killers here. And I think the interesting thing about serial killers is that these were in places where there wasn't a whole lot of ground warfare going on. So God knows what actually happened out there in the countrisides of France and Germany. And
oh, never mind, like, Vietnam and in fucking Afghanistan. I mean, I still feel there's a lot of weird shit that happens that we just didn't uncover in our research.
Yeah. Or just was never reported.
Well, with World War II, but I mean, with Vietnam, I think it's fairly well known, the tortures that
yeah,
everyone
how do you know
was...
that Private Milwaukee didn't frag his, like, his crew when they're all out in the jungles of Saigon up to the knees in muck, fight for our goddamn freedom, and they get back, and we hand them a Pepsi Cola can and a slap on the back and say, thanks for serving your country, you legless old man. And
well, just, they like, were very rude to the Vietnam.
I'm just saying that there's a lot of things out there that make my blood boil.
Why are you... Vietnam vets did not get the free cola.
I'm going to start changing this show called Blood Boiling with Henry Zebrowski.
Blood Boiling?
Yeah.
I do not sign off on this.
No, it's me getting stuff out of my... stuff that makes my blood boil. Like,
you
know, when the
not,
tip of your shoelace falls off and you can't get it through the hole again.
You're just not in good enough shape for it. Can I just say that? You can't have a show called Blood Boiling because it's really a medical problem?
Because my blood is... boiling.
It's too hot.
Yeah.
I
can feel the blood. Sometimes when I get mad, I feel my eyes get bigger.
I can see them get bigger, bloodshot. Very scary. Yeah. Well, thank you for that. So there are two main guys.
That wasn't sincere.
No, it was. Thank you for that. Blood Boiling with Henry Zebrowski. Oh, everyone's going to love it.
Yeah, when the hot pocket's cold on the outside but burning hot on the middle.
Hi, that
gets
makes
my blood boiling.
Love this guy's show. All right, so we're going to cover two main guys. Do we want to start with Gordon Cummings?
We'll start with Gordon Cummings.
Yeah. Gordon
Cummings.
One more
Cummins. Thing I want to say before we get to as far as the rest of the world goes in World War II. There were places like Russia, and I know Russia is very reticent to report on crime, serial killers. That's why Andrei Chikatilo was able to operate for so long.
And how many he killed, what, 42? 54.
Yeah, 54. 54. He is, as far as we know, he's one of the top guys, 54 mm-hmm. that they can prove.
Yeah.
He was able to operate for so long because the Russians just didn't want to admit that there was a serial killer in their midst, and they didn't want to tell people that all was not kosher in the
Russian socialist state didn't have everything under control.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want people worried while they're in those bread lines, you know?
They're already
worried about enough stuff. Starvation, overall, like survival.
Russia was full of butt slashers.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Guys is going, you're waiting for toilet paper, and he goes,
These two guys were the only documented ones that I could find, at least, out there. I mean, there was, as far as like World War II goes, and even during World War I, I was only able to find one guy. And he was just a bluebeard that took advantage of war widows.
What's a bluebeard?
Bluebeard's a guy who sleeps with women who've lost their husbands for their money, gets all up in their shit, and makes them fall in love with them, and then murders them.
Yeah.
Takes their money.
Yeah, it's essentially making
a brilliant
woman,
business model.
It's making a woman fall in love with you, and then you kill her. After you gain control of her assets, that's when you murder her.
I'm sorry to all the women that fell in love with me.
Yeah. That's why you're so wealthy right now. We have to rush with today's podcast because after today's show, Henry, you're extremely busy. What are you doing?
I'm picking up a record receiver, receiver, and getting my pants hemmed.
And you're going to go get your pants hemmed.
Yeah, because I have a 38 waist and a 27-inch inseam.
Well, look at that. Little Catholic Kennedy schoolboy.
I must get my
pants hemmed, mommy.
I don't got anybody to do it for me, so I'm taking applications for ladies who want to come hem me pants.
They don't. They don't want to do
come
that,
come on,
though.
Let's just, I'll pay you money.
This is why you weren't able
I'll
to get
pay
anybody.
Pay you money to stay.
They're not falling in love with you, Henry. You're not going to get their assets.
Just come and stay. Just these old hallways of mine, just me and the spiders and the rats. That's what I live in my old mansion on top of a hill.
Well, you got to have something to eat. That's not bad. That's good protein in a spider.
Great protein.
Solid protein.
Let's do this. Our first guy today, Gordon Frederick Cummins.
Cummins. This is how we'll clean up me Cummins.
Ugh. He was known as the Blackout Killer and the Blackout Ripper, which I think is a fucking great name for a serial killer.
Yeah, Blackout Ripper's awesome. Yeah. Sounds like a band name.
Yeah, the Blackout Ripper. He was an English spree killer who murdered four women and attempted to kill two more in London in 1942. He did all of this during the London Blackouts. And if you don't know what the London Blackouts are, from 1940 to 1944, the whole of London was under a complete and total nighttime blackout in order to prevent the Luftwaffe.
Well, they didn't
you know,
want
your
nice,
grandma,
beautiful
your grandfather
skin.
Used to shine the planes for them before they started flying over there, right?
The Luftwaffe. That sounds nice.
That would be the German Air Force.
Oh, it just sounds like they're just like bombing them with a bunch of great loofahs and things like that. You come out with smooth
skin. Yeah,
that's
exactly what it was. That's why they had the gigantic blackout.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's what your grandfather was doing. Yeah,
he
was
are just we bringing out my loofahs. Grandfather again?
Yeah, that's all he was doing. Yeah,
he was under the sea like the Little
teddy
Mermaid
bears that they were sending over to Poland and into London. At the
my
time.
Opa was like a little Sebastian down there playing with the crabs under the sea, singing
what?
Songs, playing with Ursula.
That doesn't make any
that's
sense.
That's possible though. I had more of a Disney. Disney memory of my Opa.
The London blackouts, they were essentially to prevent the Luftwaffe from finding London and bombing certain targets during the German Blitz. So this guy, Gordon Cummins, he decided after 2 years in the blackout, we don't know why, but after 2 years in the blackout, he decided it was time to do some killing. And
these are the people they found, too.
These are the people that they found. Maybe he was doing it beforehand. Maybe he had more victims. They weren't able to really link him to anyone else. But in a period of 6 days, this guy killed four women, attacked two others on the morning of Sunday, the 9th of February.
Took him 6 days to do what Bundy did in 15 minutes. Please, you lazy Brit. You're lazy.
And every time he killed them, too, he was just like, stab, 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 playing with their boobies, playing with their boobies. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Saw that.
I've got to get my pants hemmed now. Very interesting.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got to go to the crumpet store to test the stiffness of the crumpets.
Oh, that's good. God damn it, man. Get out of here. It's stiff enough. All right.
On Sunday, February 9th, the body of teacher Evelyn Hamilton, aged 40 or 42, was discovered in an air raid shelter. She had been strangled. There were no signs of sexual assault, and her body was not mutilated. The killer had either placed her in the shelter after death or launched his attack when he found himself alone with her within its walls.
You just sit right there. You be safe. So sorry again. See you soon. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
And so this guy, I think, has one an honor of fastest escalation in serial killer history.
Yeah, he did like, he just did, it's like a time-lapse video of it, a serial killer's career.
Yep, his next victim, Evelyn Oatley, the next day was found dead in her apartment in Soho. She had turned to prostitution and was using an assumed name, Nita Ward.
That's really great prostitute name, too.
Nita Ward? Yeah, that's amazing.
Like, yeah. Hey, Nita Ward. And now we all be like, my name's Gump.
Yep.
Pussy Gump.
Pussy Gump. That sounds good. I'll take you.
Yeah, you want a date because all I got is farts for you, baby.
That's
come on
okay.
Over here. I'm sorry. I got a fucking, my fucking pussy's all closed up from being sick earlier today.
Well, this is really.
So the only thing I got is the back. Come on over here.
Magnifying my intense loneliness here. I'm going to say yes, Pussy Gump. Thank you.
Well, the actual cause of death.
I wish they could be more like Nita Ward. Remember them? Yeah, they were great. Those nice British brats.
Killed all of them.
Ah, yeah.
The actual cause of death of Nita Ward was strangulation, but her throat had been cut after the actual death, and she was naked. Her body had been sexually mutilated with a can opener.
And he's like, oh, no. Oh, there's no peaches in there. Oh, I better go back to my war rations. And no peaches in there. How will I make me crumpets? How will I make me Scottish pie?
Oof. That's sad, though, yeah. Back to the dehydrated foods.
Pokey. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this was not the crank can opener, by the way. This was the actual tin opener that had the triangular point at the
end. It's just a knife. It's a stabby thing.
It's a stabby pen knife, and there's a lot that a man can do to some sexual organs with a can opener.
You do a lot of things with sexual organs with a lot of different things.
Yeah, what's your favorite thing to do with them?
I don't know. I like to treat them kindly.
Yeah. You just like cuddle with the organs?
Yeah, with just, you know, like a little bit of a, I don't know, like a feather. Like a little ding, ding, ding,
just play with
ding,
a liver.
Yeah. But you can rub a bell on it.
Oh, that's sweet.
A lot of different things, weird things you could do to genitals that don't necessarily hurt them.
Two things.
You know,
feather
two
and
things.
A bell.
Yeah. Dip them in some toothpaste.
Well, that's just if you want to clean them.
Wow.
I don't know where that... I'm sorry.
Yeah.
On the very next day, Tuesday, the 11th of February, another prostitute, Margaret Florence Lowe, also known as Pearl, which is a classic
prostitute name.
Great. Yeah.
She was murdered in her apartment. She had been strangled with a silk stocking and mutilated with both a knife and a razor blade. The pathologist who found her, Bernard Spilsbury.
Spilsbury.
These British people.
It's ridiculous.
He went over there twisting his baton around going like, something must be done here.
Well, actually, what he said is that the injuries that she sustained were quite dreadful.
Quite dreadful. I've never seen anything like it. Off I go, because I'm spotty with Mary and Marjorie.
And he described the murderer as a savage sexual maniac.
That's right.
This is how I used to describe myself in the old Oxford days, but now I'm just a constable serving the streets. Well, I'd better go and have a spot of stew over at O'Garnery's.
Sounds like a pretty busy day.
It's kind of fun. It's like my day.
Yeah. So this is two days after the first Evelyn was killed.
This is
and
3 days
sexually,
after.
No, he did the... One was just murdered. The second one was sexually assaulted. This was further sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
I mean, it kept going more and more. He kept bringing more implements into it. And he was also experimenting. He was, as all serial killers do, he's experimenting. He's exploring. He's trying to find exactly what sort of killing he really enjoys. Mm-hmm. He definitely settled on sexually mutilation.
Because it's also imagined, like, I imagine him like a John Cleese in, like, Fawlty Towers going like, the races, you know, it's like he's like dropping him in the toilet. Like, oh dear. Oh, I guess I'll use a plunger then.
I mean, you maybe do something with her butthole, the plunger there.
What if I just lick it? I know. I kind of want to cut it.
Yeah, I think cut it is probably better. After the person dies, there's a lot of material down there, material waste.
On Wednesday, on the 12th of February, he murdered Doris Jeannette in a second floor ground or in a two room ground floor apartment that she shared with her husband. She was known to be in the habit of picking up servicemen. She was strangled with a scarf and her naked body was sexually mutilated. His thing was it was strangulation, then sexual mutilation.
And how would he sexually
mutilate
these?
Same thing with Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
It was
the
same thing. No, you just kind of wave a fork at a vagina. You stick it. You probably play with the belly button and going like, I love you, I love you. And you're like, shut up. Shut your fucking mouth.
You're not my mother. You know,
you're not
like
my mother. You're not my mother. You can't tell me the rules.
Yeah,
saying stuff like that, you know.
Right.
Put me under the staircase. Playing with her boobies a little bit. Bite them.
Right.
You know,
right,
stab her, put a bunch of toothpicks in her face. Be like, oh, look, it's acupuncture.
That's kind of fun for the eyes, though.
Yeah,
huh?
Lots of fun. Lots of things you can do when somebody's dead.
Vision.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to convince a girlfriend to do it.
That's tough to be a doctor.
It really is.
But this guy didn't have sex with the corpses, though. He didn't dabble in the necrophilia like Bundy.
No.
It just says sexually mutilated. It mentions nothing about rape.
And so what are the, what do you just cut out the pussy? Is that what happens here? I mean,
what are you talking about? No, you stab at it.
You just stab at it with a knife.
Yeah.
I mean, an example of sexual mutilation would be Ted Bundy using the hairspray can to jam that woman.
Right.
Her nipples off and put it over her eyes, being like, I can't see, you know?
Yeah.
Stuff like sexual.
That would be sexual mutilation, absolutely. They
I would
go
still
into,
say Ted Bundy jamming a hairspray can up a woman's pussy is not as bad as what Twisted Sister did with hairspray.
I'm still just going to say
the
80s
rock fucking phenomenon of hair rock, of hair metal. Hair metal was worse for hairspray than Ted Bundy. I'm saying it.
It's an entertaining form of rock and roll. Yeah. It's just rock and roll.
It's not rock and roll.
It's not sexually humiliating a dead woman.
Well, you can't humiliate the dead. You can't! You can't humiliate the dead!
Let's keep moving.
What?
You know? That's a controversial stance.
That's a real controversial stance.
That's what we'll say. We're going to say, you know, like, we're going to call Hardline with Ben Kissel. It's going to be your new show.
Yeah.
Where you're going to take these opinions and do that on your new show.
Yeah.
Hardline.
Pushes the envelope with Ben Kissel.
Does a corpse feel sad? Let's watch Schindler's List together.
It is if you cut a frown into it.
You can do a bunch with it. Have you ever played with a Mr. Potato Head? Now imagine it's a fucking dead dude.
On Thursday, Gordon rested. No murders that day.
Like God
Jesus
did.
Moment.
Like, it was him sitting just reading a newspaper, just been like, oh, the horses ran fast today. My pecker's stiff. Oh, it's because I'm looking at these pictures of the dead woman I did in the newspaper.
Evelyn, Margaret, and Doris. It was like the names that he killed. Evelyn, Margaret, and Doris.
You can add Greta to that list.
Oh, and Greta.
For on Friday, he attacked Greta in an alleyway, did not kill her because a delivery boy heard the scuffling.
Hey, old baby, what you doing there? I got to get all these tea packets back in delivery.
Get out of here!
Cummins ran off, but he left. And this kind of does play into your bungling serial killer theory, because he left behind his Royal Air Force issue gas mask. The container was marked 525987. It was easily traced and linked back to Cummins. However, the police were still under this investigation when 1 hour later Cummins attacked another woman. And I want to bring in an actual British person to tell us the story of what happened next.
Ooh. I love their accents.
Yes, they're fun.
And this is one of my favorites.
His uniform belt, he left in the flat of another prostitute an hour or so later. He picked her up in Regent Street, just around the corner from the unconscious body of Greta Hayward. They took a taxi back to the girl's flat in the Paddington area. It had been snowing, and it was freezing. So she kept her boots on as she undressed in front of a tiny gas fire. It was just as well. A strange expression came over his face, said the streetwise girl. And he grabbed me round the neck and tried to strangle me. So I booted him in the shins and made him shout. He said no more. He put on his coat, gave me 15 quid, and he went. But he left his tunic belt behind.
He's dropping shit everywhere.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't believe I left my belt. Oh, my pants will fall down. Isn't that funny? Oh, my pants fall down. All the parliament's watching and going like, no, indecent.
And that's where Benny Hill got all of his great comedic ideas.
I'm sorry I cut your pussy.
And then his pants fall down, and everybody laughs, and they love it, love it, love it.
Yeah, prostitutes run by with big balloons in front of their chest.
This is just a bad day for this guy, huh? He loses his gas mask, and now really,
well, obviously he's new.
Well, yeah, yes, and this is where his inexperience is really shown through here.
You can't just jump into this shit. Yeah, it's not easy. You got to plan. Ted Bundy did dry runs for fucking months.
Yeah. I mean,
this is also how one of the reasons why Ted Bundy, it was the same kind of pattern because if you remember in Florida, he that last woman he attacked, he didn't kill her, so he didn't get the release that he actually needed, so he went to the next apartment.
God.
And he didn't actually kill her either. So this guy has somewhat of the same pattern as that. Tried killing the first one, didn't do it. Tried killing the second one,
right.
Didn't do it. But I thought that was so weird. It's like, threw her 15 quid and then left.
As far as a day of a prostitute goes during World War II...
How often do you get choked as a prostitute?
Yeah,
I'm sure it happens...
Often.
Two times a day, some dude goes like a funny look across his face and he goes like, I hate you, Mom! And then it's like, so that'll be $50? Thank you again. Thank you. Sorry, you know, I'll see you.
It's similar to when you go to Fat Sow, which is a great meat store here in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
How is it similar to Fat Sow?
When you go there and then you demand all the food and you curse at the people.
No, I sensibly order because if Fat Sow is one of those barbecue places where you order by the pound, and if you don't watch yourself properly, you'll spend $80 sitting by yourself. And it's not like I've done that.
No, you haven't.
But I've learned since then what a human eats. To me, it's more like you go to the burrito store and it's closed because the fucking health inspector is closing because it's full of rat meat.
Yeah.
And you're like, but I liked it.
It
you know, and then you, oh, I guess I have to go get a fucking pita across the street. That's what it's like.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with this guy. He had his beautiful rat burrito, then he lost her, then he went for the pita, and he lost her as well.
So now
he's extremely upset.
Yeah.
So was he wearing his gas mask to hide his identity?
No, he was just carrying it around.
Maybe he had one of those. Maybe it was one of those American fart prostitutes that you referenced earlier, and he just always wears a gas mask.
I better put on my gas mask because here comes Farty Lucy.
She is a special prostitute.
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, you ready to get the hot air balloon? That's what I call when I fucking staple a blanket over here and I'll stick my ass in it and I'll fart all up in your goddamn face.
I'm sure there's a man.
I can't wait to pay you money for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, my pussy's all full of raisins. Sat down on a fucking box of raisins. Now my pussy's all full of them. So can't use it. Closed for fucking business.
Because of raisins? Yeah, that's a strange reason to close your pussy for business.
Well, they picked up Gordon 2 days later on Sunday, February 16th. His fingerprints, of course, matched the bloody can opener that they found. A search of his quarters turned
out. Also left the can opener.
He left the can opener. He's a fucking goblin mess. I mean,
he's Mr. Bean over there.
Yeah, he really was.
Something happened to make this guy snap. There was some trigger.
Or you're saying, that maybe, he had a bad waitress.
Yeah.
You know, just something happened. Maybe that's what it was. He couldn't get his burrito, so he had to have a pita, so he flipped out.
Yeah.
Could be.
Something made him flip out. Who knows? But they found in his quarters, they also found several items that belonged to his victims. He took trophies as well. He took a cigarette case belonging to one woman, took a fountain pen belonging to another. On June 25th, just a few months later,
Why did she have a fountain pen? Was she writing receipts?
I mean, this is back in the day. Everyone had fountain pens.
Yeah, this is back in the day when people were literate.
I felt like a fountain pen was more like an iPhone 5 back in the day. If you had a fountain
pen,
no. It was like an iPhone 5.
Now it's expensive. Then it was just pens. It was just pens.
But prostitutes don't have iPhone 5s now.
Well, actually, I can answer that question.
I bet they do. Yes, they do. They do have. Prostitutes do have iPhones. Yes.
Huh. Yeah. I can answer that question for you. The fountain pen was taken from Doris Jeanette. Remember, Doris's husband lived with her. He was a hotel manager.
Yeah, he had fountain pens all over the place.
Yeah, he was a man of business.
Pens.
So he needed. There were plenty of fountain pens around.
Sure,
On 25th of June, the Blackout Ripper was executed at London's Wandsworth Prison, and poetically, an air raid was in progress over the city as he was led to the gallows.
At Wandsworth Prison.
Poor Gordon Cummins.
Poor Gordon Cummins. And he was executed by the famous London executioner, the longest-serving executioner that served up until, I think, like 1990. He was the hangman. He's a very interesting guy.
Albert Pierpoint.
Ooh, that's awesome. Yeah. We should do a show on that.
We're definitely, there's an executions episode that I've got work bubbling in my brain right now. It's bubbling right now. We could do a whole episode.
Gordon Cummins about that. Yeah.
We could do it just on executioners. They're fascinating people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Now all right, stick a pervert's head in a block. Yeah, all right, let's hang him up. Yeah, you like it when you're really socked, Mr. Cummins?
Oh, yes, I do, Mr. Executioner. Will you suck it for me?
That's very, very nice.
I'm sending you straight to L.
That's British hell.
Yeah, that's British hell. And now that we're done with Britain, let's move on over to France for Marcel Petrois.
C'est la vie.
This guy is amazing.
A.K.A. the Butcher of Paris, the Scalper of Etroli, the Monster of Rue Lesseur, the Demonic Ogre, the Underground Assassin, the Werewolf of Paris, and of course, Dr. Satan.
This guy has had, he's done every crime.
Everything.
This guy's amazing. There needs to be a... I cannot believe that there's not a movie about this guy.
I think there's a couple of movies about him.
Yeah, I think there was two movies about
him.
But
movies,
they didn't reference House
books.
Of a Thousand Corpses. It had to be a nod to this guy when the bunnies go down to Dr. Satan.
He reminds me of like an H.H. Holmes, where it's like the same thing where people were like, oh, he's charming and cosmopolitan. But you imagine him just going like, hey, come here, little girl. God! Like, and it's like, we love his energy. He's got the effervescent life force.
Yeah. And he reminds you of Ted Bundy in that he was into politics. He reminds you of John Wayne Gacy in that he was a well-loved, well-respected member of the community.
I mean, I don't know. It seems like he wasn't. He was just more like, they were like, well, there's a guy you can go get free drugs from, and he's over there, and it's just him hanging out going,
well,
like,
no,
hey,
he
come
was
on
elected.
Down. During, I suck your feet there.
No. During the investigation into the murders that he committed, they interviewed 2,000 former patients, and not a single one had a bad word to say about
him. He's got the look, he's got the touch.
So this guy, Albert...
X-Factor.
Marcel Pierrepont, he was convicted of killing 23 people in his home in Paris during World War II. He is suspected of killing around 60. That's what they can link him to. Some estimates put it as high as 160.
Well, yeah, because he had a death factory in his house.
He had a death factory in his house. This guy, he was taking people during the collaboration government in World War II in France.
That's a fun revisionist way to put it, the collaboration government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Vichy government. They were a collaboration government that was installed after the Nazis marched into Paris, and he was trying...
beat them with a bunch of their own bread, took bread out of their fucking stalls and just hit them in the head, and they were like, oh, thank you. And they're just like, oh, ha-ha.
Yeah, a lot of Japanese over there, huh?
Oh, thank you.
And this guy had one hell of a scheme going. There were a lot of people in this time that were trying to get out of Nazi-occupied Paris. There were resistance people. There were criminals that were trying to get out, trying to escape the Gestapo. There were, of course, plenty of Jews trying to get out of there. And what this guy would do is that he would take them into his apartment. He would tell them, all right, we're going to send you to Argentina. It's going to be safe.
Yeah, sit down. Have a slice of bread. Have some wine. You sit there. You like?
You sort of sound like the guy from the new Star Wars movie there.
Yeah, you sound more like Bazulba or Babalza.
Babalza.
Yeah,
do I? Is he French?
No.
That's a major problem.
No, he's Middle Eastern without a doubt.
Interesting.
Yeah, he sounds like Israeli Jewish.
Or French, whatever. I mean, you know, we're all one people.
So this guy, he would tell people, he's sending them to Argentina through Portugal, but he told them, like, listen, Argentina has very strict rules about immigrants. You have to have typhoid.
You gotta have their Thai food.
You gotta have Thai food. You gotta bring a pad Thai with you if you want to get in Argentina.
Hey, you got to have the new dish, my friend.
All right.
I don't know if we're going to let that one happen anymore.
I think you need to retool.
Yeah, welcome to Get Free, my friend.
I've had enough.
Marcus is getting very upset, Henry. I like it. I love what you're doing, but it's just Marcus. He's got all the dials. So if we want to keep on doing the show, we got to make him happy.
So he told them that he would have to give them typhoid inoculations, but really these shots were only filled with cyanide.
Just cyanide. But can we go back real quick?
We're going to start with this guy's early life. Well, let's start when he was a child. This guy had he had two out of the three on the serial killer triad. He tortured small animals to death constantly. He wet his bed. He wet his trousers at the drop of a hat.
I just how like every single person who'd ever met him in his whole life described him as a person with mental illness. They're all like, well, he's got a problem. Well, he definitely got a problem. He definitely has a problem.
Yeah.
And they just bounced him from place to place to place.
Yeah. Right. He propositioned a male classmate for sex. He was caught passing obscene photos to other students. This one I love. At age 11, he stole his father's revolver and fired it off in history class.
That's great.
Another time, he staged a circus act at school, standing a friend against a door and throwing knives at
him.
Yeah!
I mean, but the thing is, that kid didn't die. He was good at throwing knives.
They just had an old idea of... I refuse to believe that he was charming and sophisticated. I refuse to believe it.
No,
he
what
was
do you mean?
He was a drooling maniac. He was a maniac.
He had some pee-pee in his pants, but he could throw a hell of a knife.
He just was saying funny things because he was just like, you know, like, I'm not going to do the accent again.
No. Well, you have to figure out how to do it first.
I'm going
to get you some cheese. You'll
put
be
some
able to do
softness
it.
In it. You don't speak French.
No, I don't speak the romance languages. No, but he basically, he was just kind of funny because he was so off balance. He must have just been because he was a blithering
maniac. I mean,
can
imagine how dark and twisted French comedy would be during this time. Their entire country is on the verge of war throughout his entire life.
He just looked like a normal person. It's like Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy was saying ludicrous things to people over and over the place, but it's like he's got a trustworthy face and he's got a charming way of saying it, so it's like you kind of go along with it, but he obviously was covered in dirt everywhere he was going, you know, just like touching himself, grabbing at people.
He was also, like many serial killers, he was a thief, and when he would go to visit his brother, his brother insisted on searching his pockets every time. Before he left, he said, "All right, Marcel, you know what time it is, take them out."
Take them out.
Just give me the clock.
I did not steal anything, brother. I would never do such a thing.
Okay, just that's better.
Yeah,
right? Better? Yeah. Not quite so grating.
Yeah. See, that's what I imagine.
A little more sensitive to the human ear.
He just checks his pockets all full of doorknobs from the house.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the other thing. It's like when he became a doctor, they put him in a hospital for kleptomania for like 2 weeks, and then he was fine.
Oh, and he was in psychiatric hospitals all throughout his life.
He's a real Winona Ryder.
A psychiatrist pronounced him an abnormal youth suffering from personal and hereditary problems, which limit to a large degree his responsibility for his acts. He was in and out of psychiatric hospitals, in and out of prisons.
Do you remember?
Sometimes he was able to convince the judge that he was insane, that he needed to go to prison, that he was criminally insane.
I've got to go.
I am just
loosey-goosey up there. If there were actual nuts and bolts in my brain, they'd be falling out of my ears.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Marcel, did you steal the hinges off the door?
Sorry, but they just gold and pretend.
Just give them back. We're just going to let you go.
One time when he was arrested for theft, he told the judge that he was mentally ill, but once he got to the hospital, he said that it was a momentary aberration caused by his preoccupation with a new invention, a suction machine designed to relieve constipation.
A suction machine.
Which is just a tube that goes up your fucking ass. He just loved that machine.
Oh, God. Just completely obsessed
with
it.
This guy's fucking
amazing. Can you just
imagine
what that machine looks like? A suction machine designed...
It's just a tube to a vacuum machine connected to an old-timey bike, which a guy just running as hard as possible.
But then he forgot to put the bag on the back of it, and he just gets covered in shit while he bikes.
I'm sorry, I've always used this machine for an hour today. I must be on empty.
I guess he is. That's sad.
So, of course, 1915, World War I breaks out. He volunteers for service in 1916 during the Second Battle of Aisne, I think. He was wounded and gassed, which can only further fuck up his brain.
Absolutely.
Like, sure.
Can only further fuck him up. Of course,
maybe it's like when you get hit by a donkey and you go cross-eyed, like get hit by a donkey again, your eyes go back to straight. I mean, maybe this worked out for him.
Well, of course, he was sent to a hospital where he was arrested for theft, for stealing army blankets, morphine, wallets, photographs, letters.
This is what I'm saying. He's not even, because it's obvious. He's obviously got armloads full of shit, just like looking around, running out of the fucking hospital.
What is the point of stealing letters? It's not your mother or father writing you.
It's something to steal. He's a kleptomaniac.
It's just something to steal.
Yeah, and so he convinced that judge that he was criminally insane. So they sent
him... Fuck that movie, The Bling Ring.
The Bling Ring?
The Bling Ring. About those fucking chicks who stole all the things from Paris Hilton and whatnot. Everyone thinks they're some of the greatest kleptomaniacs of all time. They got nothing on Marcel.
Absolutely. And I'm surprised you'd even bring up the Bling Ring.
The Bling Ring. Oh, you got to see it. It's a great movie.
No, I will not see it.
Oh, I'm going to make you fucking see it.
I will never see it.
When I fucking treat you like that one dude in Clockwork Orange, make your eyes stay open, duct tape your hands behind
your
head.
Is this a plan of yours?
No, I haven't thought about this for a while.
So, of course, he gets after he gets out of the mental hospital, they send him right back to the front lines.
Because, you know, because he volunteered again. He just, like, volunteered. It's like, I've got to go. It's the romance of war, huh?
I mean, if you're a notorious peer, if you constantly piss your trousers, what better place to be in than the front lines of World War
I've got to say to you, Marcel, my friend, you pee-pee your pants, huh? Enemy no find you.
It's good. It's still a little bit more like Bulba.
Yeah, it's definitely. It's a lot more like episode one. Yeah,
yeah, but that's fine. Yeah,
the Jewish stereotype.
Interesting. Are we being? Was that anti-Semitic?
Absolutely
I think George
not.
Lucas is anti-Semitic.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. Also racist against Asians.
Well, I've heard the new that? Star Wars was the new Star Wars was written by a Jew chained up in his shed in the back of his mansion.
Isn't that something?
Which is why it isn't very good because people can't work under those conditions.
No, they invent characters like Jar Jar Binks. That's not good.
So he goes back to the front lines, decides he doesn't like it, shoots himself in the foot. Some people say he shot himself. I saw another account in which it said that he injured his foot with a grenade.
Grenade.
Yeah.
He grenaded himself in the foot?
Yeah.
He's nuts.
He's nuts. He's fucking crazy.
Step on a nail, dude.
Yeah. He volunteered to go to war twice. Both times got himself kicked out of the war, then went back.
Yeah.
Right. Now I'm just going to grenade myself in the foot.
However, in 1920, he decides, you know what I need to do? I should become a doctor.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because it was easy back then.
Yeah, it was easy. Mm-hmm. He went into an accelerated education program for war veterans. He completed medical school in 8 months.
8 months.
Eight months. Yeah, and then he...
this was back in the day when being a doctor was more like being a mechanic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
And despite two criminal insanity rulings for past crimes, he received his medical degree in December of 1921.
Absolutely.
And began his practice at Villeneuve-sur-Yon. I apologize in advance to all of our French speakers for my pronunciation of the town names that are coming up.
I will not respond. I will not apologize for my accent.
That's
because
good.
That's how it sounds to me.
Well, let me just apologize for Henry Zebrowski's accent on behalf of the last podcast on the left.
He gained a reputation for dubious medical practices such as supplying narcotics, performing illegal abortions, and of course, theft. He stole money from the town's treasury. He stole the bass drum from a local band.
He stole a bass drum.
Yeah, the bass drum thing was insane.
Well, just like, it's just, again, how do you obviously not steal? How do you not be obvious when you're stealing a bass drum? And then also, how bad was the band?
Yeah, how bad?
I mean, I get not that bad. Because I think he needed the bass drum.
I think he stole things that he didn't like because he also stole a stone cross that he had deemed an eyesore.
But I also feel like there are times where he like looks at stuff and he's just like, I think he's just the kind of guy who like walks around and he's just like, I could play the bass drum. I just need to get a bass drum. And he sees the bass drum in the street. He's just like, take the bass drum. And he just like takes it. He plays with it for 2 seconds. And it's just like, bass drum sucks.
This is hard. I mean, I would say, I guess it makes sense that he performed a lot of illegal abortions. He's certainly good at making things disappear, and he's
but technically, you know, it's a needed service again.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, hell, what woman would want to be pregnant during a war?
Nazi-run France. That sounds fucking horrible.
Yeah.
So,
worst thing he did, I would say that. The illegal abortion. Not the worst.
No.
All
no.
the things.
I'd say
stealing the bass drum.
At this point, stealing the bass drum from that poor fucking band nerd.
Yeah.
Because that's all he had in this life.
Yeah, just my bass drum.
That was his fucking equalizer in life. Is that he's like, I could definitely play the bass drum for as long as possible. Oh, somebody took it. Well, I guess I'll go back to being secretary of the chess club.
Oh, that's so sad.
I played bass drum in marching band.
This is what I'm saying. Look what it did for you.
Yeah.
Imagine if someone stole your bass drum with the height of your learning how to play the bass drum.
That would have made you sad, right, Marcus?
It made me extremely sad.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, how am I supposed to be a dork and not get laid without my bass drum?
Well, I moved to the tritons later on.
Oh, okay.
But band kids get laid all the time. They fuck each other. That's the whole point.
No, it's great.
That's why you get into that.
First time I fingered a girl was on a band trip.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, band kids are sexual maniacs.
They have to be.
Yeah, it's
band
great.
Band kids?
Yeah, band kids. Something? My God, just a whole bunch of fucking mildly attractive teenagers
Everybody's
hanging out with
rubbing
each other.
On each other.
Yeah. What instrument did the girl play that you fingered?
Clarinet.
Should have gotten a blowjob.
All right.
Let's move on.
Of course.
I mean, that seems, out of all the instruments, like clarinet, I would like to
get
a blowjob.
It's a woodwind.
Yeah,
it's a woodwind.
If anything, you want to go for the trombone player.
Yeah, you want to. Get something.
The girls who really know how to work their lips.
Yeah, the one who's playing it wrong by sucking on it.
All right, well,
the woodwinds are more about breathing control.
Just let me know. you know,
she sucks
listeners.
So hard she could make that trombone play backwards.
Holy Lord. No, Marcus, you're just farting a whole bunch. Hey, yeah, kind of fun. Yeah, yeah. The human truth. Anyway,
comes over.
Back to murder.
Back
to
murder.
Death.
This guy, he also, he spread bogus credentials all around town. He started printing slur campaigns against the other doctors in town.
For no reason.
Comparing himself to
They won't give you free drugs, so they won't smell like piss.
Comparing himself to the two elderly doctors, the flyers read, Dr. Patois is young, and only a young doctor can keep up to date on the latest methods born of a progress which marches with giant strides. This is why intelligent patients have confidence in him.
Very this guy's intriguing. Amazing.
Yep.
He's a brilliant man.
He began running advertisements that described him as an intern, at one mental hospital where he had actually been an interne, which means a patient. So that little accent mark on the E really made all the difference in the world.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so that was a nice little switcheroo.
What does the first one mean?
Intern.
Oh.
Yeah, it means an actual... The first one means he worked there.
So you mean to tell me he just erases a fucking... an accent mark, and now he's working for the hospital?
Absolutely.
That's what he did?
Yeah.
This is the problem with French. This is why English is so complicated, so stuff like this can't happen.
Yeah. It was just a little dot that was the difference between him running the goddamn place or being locked up in the basement?
Yeah.
Wow. What a... And people say words don't matter. That's amazing.
When one pharmacist complained of the near-fatal dose Patois described for a child, Patois replied... What difference does it make to you anyway? Isn't it better to do away with this kid who's not doing anything in the world but pestering its mother?
I mean, his mother was probably like, well, yeah.
Yep, this is also when people say he killed his first victim. Her name was Louise Delavaux, the daughter of an elderly patient. He had an affair with her in 1926. She disappeared, and neighbors later said they had seen Patois load a trunk into his car, closely resembling another trunk fished out of the river weeks later, filled with the dismembered, decomposed remains of a young woman who was never identified. Police investigated, but ruled that Louise was just a runaway.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Well, they can't prove it. It's just a dismembered corpse. They can't identify. It's not like they had dental records back then in 1926.
Right. Well, no
I guess
one had
that's
teeth.
True.
Yeah.
Maybe a little gum record, something like that.
Yeah, all the teeth are made out of wood.
Why don't you bite into this mud for a second? We're going to figure out how your gums are.
And so it's that same year that he decides he's going into politics.
Yeah.
This man is just a fucking. He is Bo Jackson of serial killers. He did it all.
It's everything. When he was running.
I mean, his political resume on paper is outstanding.
It's great.
Three times going back to the war. He doesn't mention grenading his foot
he's
off.
He's going to get out
you
of
know,
it. No. None of the times. Former doctor, former runner of a mental institution.
Yes. I mean, this
an intern. Not you didn't run
you know,
the place.
Still.
Yeah.
I mean, this political resume is through the roof.
Yep. When he ran for mayor, he hired an accomplice to disrupt a political debate with his opponent. When Patois finished speaking, his crony cut the power to the auditorium, blacked out the entire village, and started several fires.
I love it.
Damn.
It's sort of like I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I heard that's how Barack Obama became senator in Chicago.
Isn't that something that is that's a goddamn fact.
Chicago politics.
Chicago politics as it used to be. Me and is it still was.
This guy also sort of has an Andy Kaufman type thing going on.
Yeah, kind of.
Really, jokes on us.
And
you know?
He won by a landslide.
Oh, he crushed him.
Oh, yeah.
I could make some comparisons to a recent election we had here in New York City, but I am not doing it because I have lost another woman.
Bill de Blasio is not like this man.
No.
Yeah, Bill de Blasio was never a fucking doctor. Never went to goddamn war.
Well,
probably stole a bass drum.
All right.
Well, while
who hasn't been tested to at least steal a Glockenspiel?
A Glockenspiel?
Yeah, I'd love to steal one of those. Just from him, though. I would just take it from his hands.
What's a Glockenspiel?
The bing bada ding dong gong 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 gong.
I love that. I know what you're talking about entirely.
Well, while some despised Patois as mayor, some called him the best mayor ever.
He's amazing.
And just loved him. After he went to jail numerous times for various frauds while he was mayor, including embezzling town funds, and after
he
being...
He just committed every crime.
Every crime. And again, he was suspended from mayor twice After the second time, he decides, all right, I'm done being mayor. I'm going to run for the general counselor's office. He runs. He wins that. Then he's accused of stealing electricity from the village. He stole electricity.
He just stole the power. I mean, that's a great thing to steal. Again, Rob Ford. He reminds me of Toronto's current mayor, Rob Ford. God,
he reminds me of like Mr. Burns putting up like the blocking the sun thing.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Like,
these guys nuts. He's
I love
fucking crazy.
The idea. I don't even know what that looks like to steal power. I just imagine he's in the living room, like fighting just, lightning like, off his fingers.
You've never done that?
No,
I've definitely done that. Where it's just like we did it once with an abandoned house in Tallahassee. They left the power still going. You literally just plug shit into the outlets that are still going on. And you have him. He's probably standing out in his front lawn. He's got like extension cords just like running from the other.
It's like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation when Clark Griswold lights up his house, and they're like, it is not Christmas.
I have made, you know, and he's got all these like lit up reindeer on his front lawn.
Beautiful.
You just see the electricity meters just spinning. You know? Yeah,
the town goes dark.
Of course, after he lost his seat, he decides, fuck it, I'm going to Paris and I'm going back to my old career as a doctor.
There we go.
Sometimes you got to go back to where you started.
And despite, and of course, he had all these untrue credentials, he had posted so many credentials on his front door, the other physicians in town actually checked up on him and they said, listen, you got to take that down. It's not true.
It's all fake. And you're obviously lying. He must have been hilarious.
And
only way for him to have made it this far is that he must have been the funniest dude on the face of the planet.
And he was a good looking gentleman to boot. Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah. He was a fairly, he was a rough man. He had a rough, like rugged look about him. Bald, but still a charmer.
Well, you can imagine how hideous all the other monsters were in Paris and at that time.
And that's the thing, is that despite all of this, he had a huge clientele. Yeah. He built a great reputation for himself. Like I said earlier,
he's just giving people free drugs. That was the whole thing, is that he's funneling drugs, he's doing abortions, he's doing all this horrible
stuff.
Well,
he was known as a guy who treated poor families for free. He was just known as an all-around great guy. But then, in 1940... the Nazis arrived.
Oh, man. At the same time, he's like, finally, people I can understand.
Yeah. And so the Nazis arrived, and this is when the real killing begins.
Okay.
Throughout the years, he had been linked to many murders.
How many murders do we suspect him of having committed at this point?
At this point, we don't know. I don't know the exact number how many murders he was convicted or that he was suspected of.
I mean, I suppose if you're like a big pro-lifer, you would argue like probably 150.
I just looked up Marcel Patois. He is not a good-looking man.
Let me see.
He is a nuts-looking man. He's got...
He's a good-looking Frenchman.
No, he's
this
not.
Is the 1930s.
We'll look at it up later. We'll put it on the Facebook page.
Of course,
Let us know what you think.
In 1940s, France, and especially in Paris when the Nazis moved in, there was a sizable resistance movement within France
But
to
as
fight
my Opa
against
often
the Nazis.
Told me, he often reminded me, when a lot of Germans invaded France, they were greeted as liberators as well. Many people...
That is a very interesting point of view. It sounds like it's a point of view from somebody that was on the other side of the argument.
Yeah, that's not extremely true. It was all fascist. The people who welcomed those liberators were fascists and Jew haters. People who thought, of course, were Nazi sympathizers.
And there was a lot of Jew hate in France at the time. As we also then see when we did the Holocaust revisionism stuff, a lot of that Holocaust revisionist writing came out of France.
Yeah. And a lot of, I think there were somewhere around 13,000 Jews in Paris alone that were shipped off to Auschwitz. But some of the people who were able to be like kind of Jewy, but were able to pass for the time.
What
of course,
do you mean kind of Jewy? Explain kind of Jewy.
Guys who didn't immediately look Jewish.
Okay, yes.
People who didn't have the name like Bezogowitz.
Yeah.
Bezogowitz, the biggest titted Jew of all time. Trina Bezogowitz.
Where the term bazongas came from.
Isn't that something? Now, I had no idea. They would say she had to staple two sheets together for a bra.
In other words, guys who could pass, but the walls were closing in on them.
The myth of
Sadie Bazunga.
Sadie Bazungowitz, later known as Sadie Bazunga.
The big tit, the biggest titted woman on
the only Jew the Germans loved. I believe Andrea Merkel
you
is her
descendant. You could play with her tits for a week and not have seen the nipples.
Look at that. So, of course, this is when his real scheme begins. He starts charging people 25,000 francs per person.
That's a bunch of money.
Yep. He had three accomplices that helped bring victims in. And these three accomplices didn't know that he was killing these people.
No.
Well, they said they didn't know that,
yeah, they said,
that he
they
was
said
killing
they
those
didn't
people.
Know.
They were getting paid, so they were doing whatever.
Yeah, they were getting paid, and as far as they knew, these people were being shipped off to Argentina. His code name was Dr. Eugene, and the people that they were getting out were Jews, resistance fighters, and ordinary criminals. It said that because he would also get their possessions that they were bringing with them, you know, jewelry, bonds, things like that, and of course the 25,000 francs.
Right.
It was said that, or they estimated that he made 200 million francs off of this operation.
I mean, he's a real Bernie Madoff, you know?
Yeah.
This guy is actually, you can compare this guy to modern day people that we know that have actually had power in our own society.
Oh, yeah. very much so. He's like a Bernie Madoff.
Rob Ford, Bernie Madoff. Fucking,
yeah, career criminal with just enough fucking charisma to keep getting pushed to the next level, keep getting pushed from like place to place. Nobody wants to deal with him because he's still kind of funny.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, among his early customers were criminals were a big part of his clientele because these people were being chased by the Gestapo.
Well, that was a part of his explanation after the fact when he finally got caught, and he was just like, "I killed criminals, I killed Nazi sympathizers." And it's like, well, you killed whoever had 25,000 francs.
His early customers were three Parisian pimps and three prostitutes. Patois later branded all of them as Nazi collaborators. He said that, you know, these people needed to die. The another pimp, Joseph Pereschi, he made his dead-end journey with his mistress. At first, before he said, he just dumped the bodies in the river.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's what he started off with. And numerous dismembered victims were dragged from the river in all of those years. The remains included 9 heads, 4 thighs, and many other mutilated
pieces. At no point there's sexual satisfaction here, right?
His
motivation is all greed.
It's all money.
It's all money, right?
We're going to get into that a little bit because they say that it's all money, but some evidence points that there may be some sadism involved.
He's done some sadism. These are just the surface level crimes. He's done so much shit that you cannot even imagine what the motives are.
Yeah.
Like, this has been forever. It just seems like his brain's like a tinker toy. It's just going back and forth, just going like, you know, it's like steal, rape, kill, murder. Get money, steal. You know, it's just like that's all he did.
Yeah, I'm sure he's extremely impulsive as well. Which and helps you win a fucking debate in a political setting. It also helps when your buddy cuts the lights out.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. In 1941, he bought a house, and that is where he began incinerating the bodies or dissolving them in quicklime.
I want to see, by the way, I'm sorry. I just want to see the him just demanding to go first. At the debate.
I will go first. I must go first.
Why are you so serious about going first? Nothing. No reason.
No reason at all.
And so on March 11th, 1944, that's when the stench became too much for the neighbors to bear. And there was extreme amounts of... I mean, this is...
Again, France is smelly.
France is smelly. This is also during a wartime. I mean, you can imagine the stench of the area. Death is all around.
Well, this
to outstink that stink, it had to be pretty smelly.
There was complete peace in France at this time. French had surrendered to the Nazis 4 years earlier.
Okay.
So
yeah,
this,
so they're just hanging.
Yeah, they're just hanging out at this time. And of course, there was smoke billowing from the house. They sent firefighters in to figure out what was going on. They soon came back out. The chief told the cops, "You got some work ahead of you."
Yeah.
The officers went downstairs where a coal-fed stove was found burning full blast, a human arm dangling from its open door.
Not even carefully put in there.
Yeah, you got to get that arm in there.
Nearby, a heap of coal was mixed with human bodies and fragments of several dismembered bodies. In Patois' garage, people found a large heap of quicklime mixed with human remains, including a recognizable scalp and jawbone. A pit had been dug in the stable, filled with more quicklime and corpses in various stages of decomposition. On the staircase leading from the courtyard to the basement, police found a canvas sack containing the headless left half of a corpse, complete but for its foot and vital organs. Police cataloged 33 pounds of charred bones, 24 pounds of unburned fragments, 11 pounds of human hair, including more than 10 whole scalps, 3 garbage cans full of pieces, too small to identify. Based on the substantial pieces, Paul said the oldest victim was a 50-year-old man, the youngest a 25-year-old woman. Examining the death house.
He did a lot of work.
He did. Does anyone else get the feeling that this is what the movie The Burbs is based on?
Yeah, with Tom Hanks.
I mean, I want to see the name. I think The Burbs probably represents the neighbor's perspective of Mr. Marcel fairly perfectly. Honey, I think he's burning bodies.
No, in his perspective, it's like he's the aviator. You know, like he's running around. He's a genius.
Police noted basement sinks large enough for draining corpses of blood. And this last detail is why I think that there's some form of extreme sadism involved in this, at least with some of his victims. They found a soundproof octagonal chamber with wall-mounted shackles and a peephole centered in its door.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that would be it.
That is that right there. When you have a whole room developed to it, you know, it's like like having, you know, like, this is my comic book room. It's like, oh, you must like comic books.
Wine cellars. Yeah. That's something that often people have in the basement.
When you're
an enthusiast
of something.
Right. Cigars, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or just shackles on the wall.
So at 1:30 a.m., a telegram finally arrived from Paris Police Headquarters. It read, order from German authorities, arrest Petois, dangerous lunatic.
From the Germans.
Yeah.
From the Germans.
Like 4 years previous, they were worshiping Hitler.
Yeah.
Yeah. And mayor, doctor, dangerous lunatic.
Yeah.
Go get him.
Nah, I've done it all.
Don't laugh at him. And he's hilarious. I mean, when you're going to talk to him, he's going to say some jokes. He's going to be very charming, but just get him.
And he just steals the detective's badge. He's like, now I am the detective. Isn't that how this works?
Here's the interesting thing about it, and I think the ironic, very ironic thing about it is that this guy was killing Frenchmen wholesale. He was not killing German collaborators. Mm-hmm. He was not killing any sort of Nazis. But because the German Gestapo was searching for this guy,
he became a hero immediately.
Yeah, French patriots said, like, all right, then this guy must be killing Jews, especially when they found out that the Gestapo had tortured and imprisoned this guy from May 1943 to January 1944. So these people thought automatically, all right, this guy is a hero. He is killing collaborators. He is killing Nazis. We're not going to put a whole lot of effort into searching for this guy.
Yeah, so the French thought he was killing Nazis.
But then he joined up with them.
Yeah, he joined up with them. Yeah. He hid with some friends. He grew his beard out, and he joined one of the resistance groups.
Isn't that something? Very similar career arc to Cat Stevens.
But also, to be honest, it is exactly the career thing as Ted Bundy. This guy is fucking Ted. He's the French Ted Bundy. Yeah.
Except he's a lot better.
He is much, much better. Ted Bundy never actually succeeded at anything.
No.
And like, I mean, you know.
What was the name? This guy changed his name multiple times as well. What was it?
Yeah, Henry the last one was Henry.
Henry Letier.
Like Letier, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's no proof of this name change. Back in the day, you could just say this is my name, and people would just believe
you. Yeah, the burden of the truth was on you.
Yeah.
Was you just be in the room saying your name.
And finally, after some of the resistance fighters, they started to catch what was going on with Petois.
Because he's probably being freaky, hanging out with the friends of occupation movie. He's just like, let me check your teeth. I'm a dentist. He's like, I don't think he's a dentist because half his teeth are gone.
So after this is after it kind of goes through two eras, because after he joins the resistance fighters, that's when the resistance starts winning against the Nazis and the collaborationist, the Vichy government, starts to collapse. So after that, the newspaper Resistance, they publish an article about Petois saying, like, listen, this guy is not who he says he is.
That's right. Yeah,
They uncover it. They say he's not who he says he is. He's actually a murderer. We need to find this guy. And Petois sends a letter to his lawyer who represented him in one of the narcotics cases, and he said, this is filthy. He called them, quote, filthy kraut lies. Since the police were in contact with the lawyer, they're like, all right, this guy's still in Paris. We've got to find him. And October 31st, on Halloween, he was recognized at a Paris metro station and arrested.
Even though he was dressed as a hot dog.
Yeah.
Isn't that sad? Just trying to get a nice job.
Among his possessions were a pistol, 31,000 francs, and 50 sets of identity documents.
He was so rich.
Problem.
All the identification.
It's having all the different IDs is always a problem.
Yeah. And so at the trial begins, and he tells his defense is that, of course, he's completely innocent. All of these people are collaborators, but he said that he first became aware of the corpses in February 1944 after he was released from Nazi custody. He said that he just assumed that the dead people were all collaborators that were killed and dumped by members of his network.
Yeah, it's like
the resistance network.
Yeah, sure thing, Marcel. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, your cum's all over everything, but we're all going to say that you're a liar. Yes.
And there was some truth to his claims that he was part of the resistance. He provided false medical certificates to Frenchmen who were drafted into slave labor.
No, that's how you mix it all up. Yeah. You mix it. But do some legit stuff and some bad stuff.
Yeah, but he also claimed that he developed secret weapons that killed Germans without leaving forensic evidence.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
That he planted booby traps all over Paris, had high-level meetings
with
Allied
commanders.
Which
are really just boobies, severed boobies. Attached to strings, and when you'd open door, the boobies would just swing and hit you in the face.
And everyone would laugh. The original booby trap.
Is this the first time since the boobies motorboat you?
Yes.
He, of course, taunted the prosecuting lawyers. He claimed that many of the victims had been collaborators or double agents. He noted that one victim, quote, was easy to spot as a collaborator. He had a head like a pimp. You know, like a police inspector.
Oh.
What's a pimp head look like?
What does a pimp head look like?
Pimp head? Sure.
It's got a big furry hat on it.
I guess so. Ooh, we have to go to one of those pimp awards at some point in our lives.
Oh yeah, that would be
great. That would be great. Yeah, anyway. We would fit in there.
Oh, they're gonna love us.
They love
us. We'll host it.
They'll love us.
Love us. Anyway.
He claimed that a lot of the people who were vanished were alive and well in South America, but because they're insane, they said, well, can't you get a hold of these people? He said, you know, South America's a big place.
It is a big place, though. It is.
And he admitted to killing 19 of the 27 victims found in his house. He claimed, of course, that they were Germans and collaborators, part of the total of 63 enemies killed.
Another comparison to fucking Bundy.
Yeah.
Just doing everything, laying all in line in the courtroom. Like, he's just doing it all.
Yeah. Yeah,
was he his own lawyer, or he had a lawyer?
He had a lawyer,
but he seemed to be talking quite a bit.
He talked a lot. Yeah. He said that there were 63 enemies that were killed. The other 44 that he killed were not identified. He told the court, "I don't have to justify myself for murders I'm not accused of committing."
Well, it is interesting, though, because, I mean, obviously it was like, you know, World War I, World War II. There was nothing but death all around. I mean, I can see how this could sort of take a toll on the human psyche, and he probably sort of normalizes it in a way.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
I mean, he definitely did not kill the most amount of people in this, 12, 14, 13-year span.
Yeah.
Like, there's a German soldier getting, like, or a U.S. soldier getting, like, honored at some ceremony for killing 150.
Absolutely.
There was a Finnish guy that I think killed somewhere around 600 or 700.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
By himself.
Yeah, so and how many fucking Nazis got awards just for pulling the fucking crank on the gas chamber going in there?
far too many, but a bunch. Yeah.
Like a bunch of them got awards there. I mean, like, I'm not saying that, you know, you probably had to smelt a bunch of stuff you found in your grandfather's closet, but I'm just saying.
You know, I mean, we could just not say those things, or we could keep them. You know, you could keep saying those. No, my grandfather cleaned his clothes.
This guy, and he had supporters and sympathizers until the very end. His lawyer's summation, hailing Patois as a hero of the resistance, won a standing ovation from the courtroom audience.
Amazing.
There were so many people that completely believe this guy's entire story.
This guy's fucking Michael Jordan.
He really is. He's amazing.
However, the judges and the jurors held a very different view after deliberating for only 3 hours. That is a mere 90 seconds for each of the 135.
Tell me, Larry,
charges.
How many times do you think he lied to us? And it's like, let's just, I want to say 93% of the words out of his mouth.
93%.
I think the conjunctions were not lies, but that's just because they were making sentences.
Yeah.
He was found guilty of 26 premeditated murders. On the day that he was set to die by guillotine, the guillotine malfunctioned in the morning, and his execution was postponed. By 3:30 a.m., a portable guillotine was delivered to the prison, assembled, and ready to do its grim work by less than an hour later.
Somebody lost a job.
Yeah. You know? He just sent in the same assistant to go, like fucking sabotage the first one.
How does a guillotine malfunction? It just drops,
right?
Oh, my
God. There's a
jawbone just stuck in the mechanism.
Isn't that something? Harold, did you not clean the guillotine?
I'm sorry, you know. And it's like, yeah, Bertois fucking Igor is like standing inside going like, yes, I did as you commanded.
Well, it doesn't seem like you did. All right, well.
And of course, when it came time to approach the guillotine, one of the witnesses noted that Patois, quote, moved with ease as though he were walking into his office for a routine appointment. Before he was strapped to the guillotine sliding table, Patois warned the observers, gentlemen, I ask you not to look. This will not be pretty. The blade dropped at 5:05 a.m., and according to witnesses, Patois was smiling as his head tumbled into the basket.
Cool!
Like a real Frenchman.
This guy.
I would say the guillotine is one of the most comfortable ways to die. I think it's...
No, it's not.
I think it's better than the gas chamber.
I've done some research on the guillotine.
Oh, really, Marcus?
Yeah, I wonder why, though. But
why
no, it's fine.
The research?
Yes.
Because I'm a curious boy.
We're all curious boys over here.
So explain to me why. Because in my personal opinion, I'm just going to say this. If I had to be electrocuted or in the gas chamber, I would take the guillotine any day. Or hanging. I would rather have the guillotine.
There are some theories that the human brain is still conscious and working for up to 6 minutes after.
I'm getting those extra minutes. That's the whole thing.
I read this account of a doctor who said that, you know, he was given permission to experiment on the head immediately after the guillotine.
He's going, hey, how you doing? How you doing, buddy? Give me a candy bar.
Exactly what he did. He put the head on a table, and he said the guy's eyes
like fucking
were moving.
Reanimator?
Like Reanimator. He said the guy's eyes were still moving, and when he shouted his name, he said that like the eyes opened larger. That there was still some recognition left in this guy's brain for up to 6 minutes afterwards.
Yeah, it's
six more minutes. Yeah.
Some sick dude just grabbing it and just being like, fucking suck my dick. Suck my dick. Just taking the head. Just like, suck. Yeah. And now, I gotta say, his lips work for a solid 6 minutes right after he died, and that's all I'm
feeding him a hoagie and stuff to watch it just like fall down. That's
kind of look,
fun.
He loves the ice cream. He loves ice cream.
What's the character from Futurama that's just a head?
There's a bunch of them. A bunch of them, yeah. Everyone looks past is a head, yeah.
Yeah, Nixon.
Nixon's the biggest one,
So it's a possibility then.
It's definitely
absolutely. Yeah, definitely. It happened in cartoon. It could definitely happen in life.
I mean, it's 6 minutes. 6 minutes of the human brain still works.
Of course, it could be complete and total bullshit. You know, it might be.
The brain's doing something.
Until the oxygen.
Can it be president?
You get it in a machine.
Yeah.
Until the oxygen runs out of the brain is still functioning.
Again, I still like it. I like it better.
I'd see it. I'd see a Live Leak video of it.
Yeah.
That's for certain.
Because when you get the lethal injection, your body, you know, although you're paralyzed, you're still feeling and you have full brain function for the vast majority of the entire, like, 10-minute process.
Yeah.
Really?
And they say you are.
Well, yeah, it's awful. It's awful.
They say you are still feeling a fair amount of pain.
Yeah.
A lot
God
of pain.
Help us. Well, this has been fun. This last bit was great.
Just don't kill anybody, you know? And then you don't have to worry about lethal injection.
Well, this is great.
This
I
is
learned
awesome.
A lot.
So, yes. So, it's Mr. Cummins.
Yep. Mr. Cummins and Mr. Patois.
Now,
Patois.
Just knowing, like, Mr. Patois, if you feel like it's exactly... You know what? Be like Patois. It's like,
have
be like Mike.
His...
Go out there. If you really feel like you can't make it, there is a pee-pants lunatic who was a doctor, a soldier, a mayor, and a murderer, and a resistance fighter.
Yep.
You can do it.
You can do it.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Not just... that. Don't do that.
No, don't do that.
Don't do that. Don't do, like, what he did.
You could learn a new skill.
Yeah. We're just saying that, you know, if this guy can, you know, live a full and healthy life. He also had a wife and a child.
He did lots of shit.
He was a father and a loving husband.
Yeah. Look at this.
Isn't that nice?
I mean, he was definitely a loud father, a loud husband, I imagine.
Sure.
Grabby father, grabby husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that's French love, then that's French love.
Boy, that's passion.
Yeah. It is passion.
So c'est la vie.
All right.
Goodbye. Au revoir.
Couple of wartime killers. Well, I guess we'll say... I did get asked... we got asked on Facebook, what does Magustalations mean, or Twitter, and I don't know, but we just say Magustalations.
Magustalations!
Magustalations!
That's good. That was a good one.
Bread and cheese!
I mean, I think it's a form of... I like and congratulations.
Isn't that
sure?
Certain?
Yeah, so I like congratulations.
Like congratulations.
Well, we're not going to stick with that one.
Hail me all, yes.
All right, hail yourselves, everybody.
Hail
Satan. And thanks.
Thanks so much for everyone who came out to the live show.
Please keep coming to the live show. It was so much fun. We really do have a legitimate group of attractive, wonderful fans. We got some sexy.
Everyone had two arms, two legs, two arms.
Everyone's out there having fun.
Yeah, but if you don't have two arms,
I
want to
see the last podcast in the live. That's the place where if you want a date, that's the place where you should come.
Yeah.
Come to it because you're going to like-minded people. We got into a lovely, morbid conversation after the show that I could only have with people that I know are into it.
Mm-hmm. I know it. It's very nice.
Absolutely.
And maybe you have a date, but maybe your date brings a friend, you know, and maybe she's real hot. Something like that. Maybe I'm on stage telling jokes. She gets all
this
turned
on. This is desperate.
This is real desperate.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, there it is.
You're in a real patois now.
Okay, all right.
Our next live show is on December 28th at 10 p.m., so be sure to come on out for that one. It's going to be another wonderful
Christmas.
One. Christmas time.
Fuck you, Jesus.
All right, hail Satan, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.